This is the recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 14th, 2017. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Pardon the delay. This will convene the Federal Election Commission open meeting for Thursday, December 14th, 2017. We'll begin with the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Hawaii Democratic Party. Do we have some late submitted documents or not?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 17-59-B.
Thank you. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motions have it unanimously. Any beginning comment? Would you like to proceed?
I don't believe the Audit Division has any further comments. We presented last week, sir.
Okay. Mr. Goodman, do you have, I see you're looking for.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Hawaii Democratic Party Committee, I had a couple of questions, for counsel, and that's first on the finding that the TV ad on Laura Lingle was wrong then about a lot of things, and she's wrong for Hawaii now. If the commission found that, or if the commission avoided a finding for now that that is express advocacy, would that expenditure nonetheless be a coordinated expenditure by the party under the would the content prong of the coordinated expenditure regulation nonetheless consider that a coordinated expenditure and a contribution? In other words, there are several content prongs of the regulation. One of them is express advocacy. One of them is an electioneering communication. Political parties don't make electioneering communications by definition. But the next provision is any reference to a candidate for Senate or president. And under that prong, under any reference, would this nonetheless be a coordinated expenditure for the party? I guess I'm asking, do you import the coordinated communication regulation to define coordinated expenditures by a political party?
Can you give us a minute? We haven't looked into that question until Yes. It was just posed at this moment.
We would need to confer with the Audit Division to confirm that, in fact, the ad was run within the 90-day period under the content prong.
Well, let me ask, do you know when, I'm looking at the report, do we know when that TV ad was run?
The television ad?
Yes, for $11,922.
Just in our notes, just that TV ad, just that $11,000 is for the production and design of the TV ad, and we couldn't find any documentation of with the media vendor for airing that television ad.
There was the clip that we were looking at yesterday. I believe it had a date on the front of it, but I don't recall particularly what that was. And I couldn't claim that that was the actual airing date, but I believe it said so.
And I can tell you that the vendor invoiced the committee on November 1st.
for $11,922 in production and design costs. And you didn't see a placement or dissemination cost?
No.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move approval of the Audit Division's recommendation memorandum to the Hawaii Democratic Party. Before I vote, I just want to announce that I'm not sure if this ever were to go to a referral that I would support punishing for exceeding the coordinated expenditure limit under the total umbrella of the National and State Party, since they stayed within that combined limit over what is essentially a paperwork assignment. But it is technically in excess of what they had been assigned, so for purposes of audit, I will support that finding. However, I'm going to move approval of this, and moving the finding of $11,922 for an apparent independent expenditure add to other issues on the basis that we have no evidence that it actually was disseminated.
Any comment on that? I guess has there been an effort to try and find that out, and that simply hasn't been able to be ascertained?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Evidence about whether or not it was ever actually disseminated?
We've had 5 years.
No.
No, meaning what?
No, you know, we requested that documentation, but we never received anything from the committee.
I see. Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand completely where Commissioner Goodman is coming from. I'd like to first move approval of the recommendation as is.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Chairman, I will strike my motion that was on the floor to allow Commissioner Weintraub to make her motion, and then I'll return.
All right, that sounds fine. Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner Goodman. With respect to the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Hawaii Democratic Party, A13-07, I move approval of staff recommendations as set forth in agenda document number 17-56-A.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub and I voted in favor. The Vice Chair, Commissioner Peterson, and then Commissioner Goodman voted against. Do we have another motion, Mr. Goodman?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, in the subject of Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum of the Hawaii Democratic Party, A13-07, I move approval of the Audit Division's recommendations. However, I'm also moving the finding regarding an $11,922 expenditure for the production design costs either to excise it or move it to additional issues, and I leave that to audit to decide.
Does I have any opinion to offer at this point?
Just my only question is just, you know, just this is considered a coordinated expenditure now, and so if it were to move to additional issues, just we would be reducing the excess limitation by the $11,000.
Yes, you would remove that $11,000 expenditure for the TV ads from the finding on excessive coordinated expenditures.
Fine. Any comment on that? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? None. Unanimously was passed. Thank you very much. Thank you. We have before us a draft advisory opinion number 2017-12, Take Back Action Fund. Mr. Pender and Mr. Fisher are here. We have this morning been offered what was called a draft C, which has not gone on blue yet. I understand we'll put it on blue right away for potential consideration. So we'll take probably 15 minutes or so to get accomplished that. Everybody can take a look at it. And I see that the comments on advisory opinion number 1712 draft B was received by us, and I'm wondering if that's been a part of the record yet.
Who's the comment from?
This is the comment from a Take Back Action Fund.
I believe we have two comments that we received late, but they're...
Mr. Chairman, we've received four comments total. They're all on our website at this point.
All right, so let's see. I'm told that... All right. So there's the two comments, and then we have now one draft C that's about to go blue. I believe.
I believe the Commission Secretary's office is waiting for the final version so that we can make it blue.
So we're going to take 15 minutes to take a, I see it's only a page or two, but to take a look at it, and then we'll decide where to proceed at that point. Okay, we're going to reconvene this session. Madam Vice Chair, we have a late submitted document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 17-59-C, otherwise known as draft C for the AO.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The motion passes unanimously. Now we'll proceed to... The draft advisory opinion number 2017-12. We have Brendan Fisher and John Pudner here, ready to inform us on your views. And I think I'll ask the Office of General Counsel to, at this point, let's have a discussion on where we are on this at this point, and we'll go from there.
Thanks. Thank you, Chairman Walther, yeah. And hello, Commissioners. So Agenda Document 17-59-A, B, and C present three draft advisory opinions in response to a request by a Take Back Action Fund. Take Back Action Fund proposes to purchase paid image and video advertisements on Facebook that will expressly advocate for or against candidates. They ask whether this paid internet content must include all, some, or none of the disclaimer information required by the relevant provision of the Federal Election Campaign Act. All of the drafts conclude that Take Back Action Fund's proposed Facebook ads require disclaimers. Draft A concludes that the ads must include a full disclaimer on the face of the ad and that the disclaimer must be clear and conspicuous. Draft A provides examples of disclaimers on the proposed internet ads that would be considered clear and conspicuous. Draft B assumes the disclaimers will be clear and conspicuous and states that other methods of identifying the advertiser's source beyond those required by the Act may be permissible. Draft C refers the requester to the other drafts and concludes that the ads must contain a full disclaimer. The Commission received four comments on the drafts from three commenters, including the requester, and we're available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. We'd like to begin with any comment or questions by the Commissioner. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for joining us here today. Appreciate it. I hear you came in from Alabama. Welcome back to D.C.
Thank you.
Excellent. So I think the gist of the issue here is that different commissioners are potentially reading your request a little bit differently. The way that some of us read the request is that you're saying that you're willing to put the full disclaimer on the ad, you're willing to adjust your ad a little bit in order to accommodate the full disclaimer. And our answer to that is, you're right, since you're not coming to us with any request for something other than the full disclaimer, then you must include the full disclaimer. And so that's our interpretation of it. We're answering, in our view, answering the question that you've asked. And one of the analogies that we've used in the office a couple of times this week is if you had a child whose job it was to mow the lawn every Saturday, But you're a reasonable guy, so if for some reason your child couldn't mow the lawn on a specific Saturday, maybe because it was too cold or the kid was sick or something along those lines, you might say, no problem, do it on Sunday or just do half of it on Saturday. And so in this case, the Saturday rolls around and the child has no request for special dispensation. He doesn't say it's cold or I'm sick or anything, and so you say, yep, mow the lawn. But if he or she were to say, I can't do it for some reason, you might say, okay, you don't need to do the full lawn or you don't need to do it today or something along those lines. There's several places in the request where it specifically says we're willing to put the full disclaimer on the ad. And so the answer is yes, you put the full disclaimer. If you were to come to us with a different set of facts, the answer might be different. But I don't think this is, you know, sort of an earth-shattering answer that's going to affect lots of people going forward. You ask a narrow question. As you know, under FECA, under the advisory opinion provision, when someone comes to us with a question with respect to a specific transaction or activity, the commission shall render an advisory opinion. And so we believe that draft B answered your specific question in a way that hopefully satisfies your question. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the requester for a very interesting and provocative question. And I want to thank the staff for some really excellent work in drafting the proposed answers. I think the draft A, I'm going to propose one very minor alteration to it before I move its approval, but I think it answers the question in a way that is thorough and comprehensive and responsive to the request that was asked. The notion that our interpretation of the law would hinge on whether you were willing to comply with it strikes me as a very odd notion indeed. It doesn't matter whether they affirmatively say we are willing to comply with what the commission tells us. If we tell them that the law means that you need to have the disclaimer, then you're obliged to have the disclaimer. And I think that, and I'll ask you, do you disagree with that?
I would just say we have lively debates among our board, and there certainly are members who push for not putting disclaimers on, so not to get too into the internal, but, and I think the question was asked, are we saying clarity on is a disclaimer inconvenient was part of the response we got. And in 20-some years of running political campaigns before running this, every disclaimer is inconvenient. I mean, I think if that were the threshold, for two reasons. One is just the space it's taken up. The bigger one is, when you attack someone, just put it blankly, the attackers always hurt too, and everyone would love to leave a disclaimer on. I would argue that it's always inconvenient to abide by this law. And so we just want to leave here knowing the rules, because we're going to go back and have a discussion among our board and give direction to creative. And, you know, there'll be some who say, hey, I thought Facebook didn't need any ads or didn't need a disclaimer. I mean, I've heard that from just among people. And so I'd just like to leave here, whatever it is, with something that I can go back and say either, hey, look, yes, look, we were right in our general thought. Disclaimers are required on these kind of Facebook ads, and we're hitting. And, you know, the material may take some different shape over time. Other issues may come up. But just to have that for a guiding principle, because there certainly are some who do not think you ever need a disclaimer on a Facebook ad. I mean, that has been proposed among people who are in our decision-making process.
And if I could add something, in drafting the request, I might have outed myself as a Midwesterner because I didn't think that stating an intent to comply with the law was a controversial proposition in any way. I think that the Take Back Acton Fund certainly intends to comply with the law, but also it was implicit in the request, and we thought self-evident that the inclusion of a disclaimer would involve some level of inconvenience. And in reading the past advisory opinions or the past advisory opinion requests and reading the regulations, it appears that the decision about whether a particular advertisement would fall under an exception depends on the constraints of the medium rather than the intent of the requester. So we just want to make that clear for the record.
Very good. Any further comment? Commissioner Goodman.
Yeah. John, good to see you back.
By the way, you can include Westerners along with the Midwesterner also.
you
your comment expressed some confusion about draft B. I guess it may help if I elaborate a bit. Draft C says yes, include the disclaimer somewhere in that Facebook ad, right? And I don't read the standard for the exceptions as, I believe, Mr. Fisher, you said, some level of inconvenience. You're right, all the disclaimers in all ads present some level of inconvenience. That's not, to me, what triggers the small items or the impracticability exceptions to the disclaimer rule. What triggers those is where the disclaimer cannot practicably be included in the ad, and I think that's animated in prior decisions of the commission. I might also add that, at least for this one commissioner, nothing could be more impracticable than where the disclaimer requirement would censor the entire message. And that's, I didn't see that occurring in your proposal or in the new, either in your proposal that included an intent to comply with the law, and you also presented a number of characters that would allow you to comply with the law. In other words, I could see how not only do you have you prepared to include the disclaimer, but the ads you propose can accommodate them in a number of different ways. So where I saw that, it wasn't even accommodating them could be inconvenient. I don't think that's the trigger for the exception. So, but draft A cites as an example of disclaimer compliance by people advertising on online media, the FTC rules. And let me just read what that citation says. This is the document from the FTC that draft A cites. If a disclosure required by the FTC is required and it is not possible to make the disclosure clearly and conspicuously, then that ad should not be disseminated. This means that if a particular platform does not provide an opportunity to make clear and conspicuous disclosures, then that platform should not be used to disseminate advertisements that require disclosures. Now that, to me, triggers either the small item or the impracticability exception. And I think that is the result. That is the censorship that we have been concerned with for the small items like the very small quarter-inch strip on the bottom of your cell phone in Revolution Messaging, where the disclaimer will actually prevent the message from being disseminated at all. I didn't read that either in your intent, in the way you're fashioning your character message, you know, because you have a truncated message. But moreover, as I looked at the new Facebook ads themselves, I see a number of different ways that you can include the disclaimer, and that's why draft B says yes. You can include that disclaimer. Let's take the Facebook video ad. It runs up to 240 minutes, and that is an online ad that appears on either a cell phone screen or a computer screen. It's multiple inches in circumference, both height and width. And because that 240-minute video is like an accordion that can go up to 240 minutes, adding a few seconds to include your disclaimer would be one way to include that disclaimer in that ad. And that can be as overlay text to the video, or that could be a separate segment of the video itself, because, again, it's an accordion. So a few seconds of ad time, of video time, to provide that disclaimer doesn't otherwise prevent you from otherwise communicating your political message. In addition to that, you've got the overlay potential. And in addition to that, you've got the character space both above and below that picture. So when I looked at all the functionality and the size of these ads, that's what distinguished this. And I'd like you to have the flexibility, and I'd like all political speakers to have the flexibility to both speak and comply with our regulations. And the way I view the new Facebook formats, the ad formats, you can do both. And you can do both effectively. You can communicate politically effectively, and you can comply by providing the disclaimer information. Now, both Draft A and Draft B agree that when you provide that information, it doesn't have to be in the square box for printed materials. Draft A says that is one possibility, but the Commission has historically said that Internet ads are not the same as traditional broadcast ads or printed ads like in a direct mail piece. So Draft A here even says you could supply some of that information above the picture and some in the text below. You could provide some above, some in the image itself. Take the Facebook image ad. You can do an overlay over the image, or you can provide the disclaimer as part of the image, part of the picture that's in the image. So when I saw all the capabilities of these new ads, I was prepared to say, yes, we are not going to censor these political messages in the way that the FTC does, in the way that Draft A would suggest might be appropriate. And yet I wanted to leave you the flexibility of providing the public the information required in our disclaimer rules in a very flexible way, given the flexibility of this new format. So the answer is yes, include the disclaimer. You have a lot of flexibility for how you do so.
Okay, Mr. Weintraub, did you have a... I thought I saw your hand up earlier. No?
It was so long ago.
It was so long ago.
I forgot what I was going to say.
All right, anything further? Ms. Elkoff, do you have any comment on any of this? Okay. I support Draft A. I like it. I think I'm going to support that all the way through here. Are we ready for a vote? Apparently so.
Sure. I'll make a motion.
Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to Advisory Opinion Request 2017-12 from Take Back Action Fund, I move approval of Draft A as the answer, as set forth in Agenda Document Number 17-59-A. Oh, wait. With the minor correction, sorry. I want to make one small deletion on page 9 of the draft. There's a reference to on line 6 through 9, there's a but see cite to a concurring statement of one commissioner, and I mean no disrespect to that commissioner in deleting it, but I just don't think that citing to the statement of individual commissioners is appropriate in an AO, because obviously one commissioner's view is not precedential. So my motion would adopt all of Draft A, would delete, with the exception of the language on lines 6 to 9 of page 9, starting with the but C through the end of that citation. So the sentence would just end on page 6 after the word exception, close paren, period.
And you start up with in particular?
Yes, and then the next sentence would start in particular on these lines.
I totally agree. Any questions on what the motion consists of? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. The ayes the motion fails. Commissioner Weintraub voted in favor. I voted in favor. The Vice Chair, Commissioner Goodman. And I'm assuming Commissioner Peterson voted against.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Any further motions? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Advisory Opinion 2017-12, Take Back Action Fund, I move approval of Agenda Document Number 17-59-B, otherwise known as Draft B.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
The motion again fails. Commissioner Weintraub and I voted against. The Vice Chair, Commissioner Goodman, and Commissioner Peterson voted in favor. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, we just made another draft C, public, just after the public, or while the public meeting just started this morning, and I hope people had a chance to take a look at it. That one, it says, yes, you have to include the disclaimer, but it doesn't provide a lot of information on how to do so, because we don't agree on the answer to that. And it provides a footnote, footnote one, so that the public knows which documents different commissioners voted on.
Comment, Commissioner Weintraub.
I was hoping we could put together a document like this, but I would prefer to do it in the even more stripped-down way that we did in the FYP case advisory opinion. But the sticking point, I think, is going to be that, as I understand it, my colleagues are quite insistent on having that footnote. But no one actually voted for draft A as is. I mean, we voted for draft A with an amendment, so I wouldn't actually want anyone to be looking at draft A because it would not represent what my views are. I think the way that commissioners have handled situations like this in the past is they put out concurring statements, and I think we could put out concurring statements that are virtually identical to draft A and draft B. Draft A obviously is modified at the table, and that would cause less confusion.
Madam Vice Chair?
I agree. We wouldn't want to include something that you didn't actually vote on, so we'd be willing to change that to draft A as amended, or if we wanted to wait to make that document public, we could call it a different draft A 0.2, version 2, and include that in there. We'd be happy to do that. That's a helpful suggestion.
Further comment?
Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. John, do you have a reaction to that? To get a unanimous vote of on the issue of yes?
Sure. I like draft C. Obviously, just reading it this morning, it seemed to sync up, and I understand the reasons for some of the notes later in B. It seems to take out those concerns for me just as far as the internal discussion we will have about exactly how to do these ads as take back action fund. Yeah, I just want to leave here knowing the rules. Right. And for me, I think C does that. And to your point on, you know, what is a very inconvenient onerous requirement, I argued in Connecticut against the Attorney General on the, I guess, other side disclosure, because they wanted to make us do the disclaimer at the front of robocalls and radio ads, where it would have completely eliminated the first right ability to speak. So I understand exactly where you're coming from there. For me, C looks stripped down to me, but I feel comfortable walking in with C to my meetings for my purposes and saying, here, we do have to disclaim. So I would certainly appreciate a positive on it if that were the consideration of the commissioners.
Further comment?
Mr. Chairman?
Madam, Commissioner Weintraub.
I would just like to suggest to Mr. Putner that he take a look at the Club for Growth AO on this issue of robocalls and very short. I don't think that actually involved a robocall, that involved a radio ad, but it might provide some guidance for the kind of situations that you were referring to, and our staff can give you the site to that particular AO.
Commissioners, can I just request, I want to make sure that we're clear, if we're being asked to prepare another draft that amends the original draft A, I just want to make clear that that's what's being requested of us.
It's not being requested.
Not, okay.
By me, no.
Okay.
I don't think we can. I don't think we can rewrite the history that way. You know, to put out a blue draft after the meeting that we're referring to in a document that we're voting on.
What?
I don't. It's not going to work for me.
You can just put it as amended.
But then people would have to listen to the tape to even figure out what the amendment was. And as I said, I can accomplish the same goal by just changing the captions on the document.
Madam Vice Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was your proposal?
No, I can take draft A and turn it into a statement, a concurring statement, very easily, and that will explain my rationale for my vote. I just don't understand why that footnote is so critical.
Because without the footnote, there would be an advisory opinion you know, on the public record that would presumably garner five votes, and it would eliminate for the public the reasoning behind how commissioners voted. And I think it frankly gives the draft a lot more
context.
Including the footnote clearly gives the public more information and more context, again, in how commissioners voted. Without it, it leaves a lot to be desired, and I think one could read sort of more into this opinion than they may otherwise. And it sounds like the requester is happy to get a vote. It'd be a great way to end the year to have an advisory opinion that gets all five votes. And we're happy to, you know, say as amended in there, your vote, clearly your motion said draft A with this change. So the public record is clear in that sense. And, you know, we can alter the footnote to say as amended.
Can I make a request? So you raised the importance of the footnote in providing context. And I wonder, and I apologize for the drafting of the initial request and for the late submission of the comment, but one of the points that we made in the comment was that we were concerned that there were elements of the request that were mischaracterized in draft B, and it may not have been critical to the final outcome, but there was language there was language in draft B that suggested that Take Back Action Fund did not think that including a disclaimer would compromise or diminish the political message that it wished to convey, and clearly that's the case, as Mr. Putner has attested to. Would it be possible to include also a cite to our comment in this footnote to provide that additional context?
It's not part of the commission's own speech. It'll be part of the public record. Mm-hmm. Something that was clearly considered. When I see a 240-minute video, I wasn't necessarily impressed that you'd have to crop or limit in any way your political message to add a few seconds of a disclaimer onto the front end or back end of that video that appears. So that wasn't necessarily dispositive to my thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there was the language in draft B that characterized the request characterized the requester as not believing that the inclusion of a disclaimer would compromise or diminish the political message that it wished to convey.
I understand your point of contention with draft B. We've already voted on that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the requester brings up an important point, though, and it's one of the reasons why I'm uncomfortable incorporating the drafts into the footnote. And again, I think if you want to provide context for what you're doing, you issue a concurring statement that explains exactly why you're voting for it. But I actually agree with requester. I think draft B mischaracterizes the request, which very specifically asks about the how prior AOs apply to the conduct that you're anticipating, and I think draft B kind of pretends that those questions aren't even there.
Mr. Chairman, the footnote will reflect that Commissioner Weintraub voted against draft B.
Yes.
We're simply trying to preserve the history of the disagreement as part of the yes answer. And this is a factually accurate history of what occurred here and preserves what is on the public record as a qualification to the yes. But certainly your disagreement with draft B is clearly reflected in a parenthetical that says you voted no on draft B. It's merely history.
Let's say the same for me.
We would be preserving.
Any further comment? All in favor?
Wait, what's the motion?
I don't know, actually. That is a motion.
Commissioner?
I assume we've done A and B, so let's...
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, Madam Vice Chair.
Commissioner Weintraub, I know you proposed amending one of the sentences in draft C. I don't have the language that you proposed in front of me, but as I told you before we reconvened, I'd be happy to accept your amended language in the body of draft C. So if you want to make that motion, I just don't have the language in front of me, or I'd do so.
Well, I will explain the language just so everybody will know what we're talking about. after reviewing draft C, which and we were, there was some back and forth last night over whether we could land on a draft C, but this version of draft C, I didn't see until we were literally at the table. What I proposed was to copy the language that we had used in a previous AO where we had this kind of problem. It was an AO that I think was issued to FYP, and maybe council can help me with the AO number. Does anybody have that? All right, well, somebody will find it. But in order, so what I was going to propose was that we take the same language that we had agreed on before, which would mean that on line 23 of draft C, I think I'm, I want to make sure I'm looking at the right version of it. On line 23, the rest of that paragraph would be amended to read, although the commission could not agree on the legal basis for its conclusion by the required four affirmative votes. And I would be willing to vote for that, unfootnoted.
Madam Vice Chair.
I prefer the original language, but as I told Commissioner Weintraub, I'd be willing to vote for her amendment to the body of draft C, but only if it includes the footnotes for the footnote for the reasons discussed. I would hate to not have four votes because we wanted to include a footnote with public documents that incorporates more context into what we did today. It just confuses me.
Well, it also confuses me why you can't accomplish the exact same goal through the traditional method of issuing a...
Because if I issued a concurring statement, it would, yes, it would be public, it would be on the website, but it would not be within the body of the document that garnered four votes. And it's important to us that our thoughts are memorialized within the document that garnered four votes. As I said earlier, otherwise one could read draft C and read more into it. As we've discussed, there's a lot of nuances here that are not incorporated, obviously, in draft C. And we want to make sure that the thoughts that we've both explained here publicly and issued in draft B are incorporated into the document that is hopefully approved by the commission.
Any further comment?
I think we're at an impasse.
I plan to stay with the draft A. Do we have a motion?
No.
Because it's not going to get four votes.
Okay, so we're not going to be able to vote on draft C because of footnote one, apparently.
All right. Thank you very much. Excuse me, Mr. Peterson.
Chairman Walther. Could we take just a brief recess? I think we're ready to come out of recess.
All right. Thanks. We're back in order. Any further comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We both voted on documents that say yes. We all agree that the proposed conduct is permissible. The requester has indicated that they truly do want a yes, and so I think we owe it to the requester and to try and turn over every stone to see if we can get to we agree with the rationale, but if we don't come up with a draft that receives at least four votes, that's probably some cold comfort to the requester. On the one hand, you could walk away saying, well, the commission was unanimous. All of them said yes for different reasons, but when you're dealing with your board, when you're dealing with others, if you don't have a draft in hand that says, I had four votes for this, I'm not sure if saying, well, let me show you three different drafts that would kind of cobble together and get us the same thing. Obviously, the advisory opinion provision in the Federal Election Campaign Act provides a shield, and I think that if we can... if we are at yes, I think we should probably try to do everything we can to try to get there. So here is another shot at it. And maybe this will require some reflection and some thought and some back and forth. But I'm looking at draft C. And if I garble the proposal the first time, I'd be happy to read it another time through to make sure that we all understand. Strike the footnote. Strike footnote one. Go to, well, let's start with the sentence on line 20. And I'll just read it, and then I'll indicate when an insertion will be made. The commission concludes that, under the circumstances described in the request, TBAF excuse me, must include all of the disclaimer information specified by 52 U.S.C. section 3120A on its proposed paid Facebook image and video advertising, although, and then here's where we would add some new language, comma, as reflected in the draft advisory opinions considered by the commission, comma, the commission did not agree by the required four affirmative votes on the basis, on the legal basis, so insert legal in front of basis, for delete or scope of it, and just in lieu of that, include the word this conclusion. So let me read it through without indicating where all the stops and starts are. The proposed language would be, the commission concludes that under the circumstances described in the request, TBAF must include all of the disclaimer information specified by 52 U.S.C. 3120A on its proposed paid Facebook image and video advertising, although, comma, as reflected in the draft advisory opinions considered by the commission, comma, the commission did not agree by the required four affirmative votes on the legal basis for this conclusion. Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Peterson, I
understand, and I don't want to interrupt anybody's review of that language and thinking it over. I understand the concerns that that everyone at this table has in terms of there's always a concern of wanting to maintain and preserve positions and not yield too much, and also concerns about perhaps inadvertently having something cited back at them another time. And saying that, well, you've in effect conceded a position that you thought you hadn't conceded, and so I'm very sensitive to what all the concerns are at the table, and certainly I'm willing to work on trying to get a formulation that will preserve, I think, what everybody wants to preserve. Obviously, lurking in the background of this request, as we all know, is a rulemaking that we've all voted on to undertake. I don't know how many, over 100,000 comments that have come in, and I commend our Office of General Counsel for their remarkable work in going through all of those, sorting through, and getting a notice of proposed rulemaking prepared, and hopefully early next year that process can get underway. And I would imagine that some of our concern is making sure that we preserve positions, don't decide too much in light of what is going to obviously be a more comprehensive undertaking. And I So I understand what the motivations are. And so if it does make this a little bit of a threading of the needle in order to answer and give an affirmative advisory opinion to the requester to give him the comfort that his organization needs, while at the same time kind of maintaining the positions that maybe each of us have going in and hope to debate during that upcoming rulemaking. So this is a proposal. Hopefully, maybe this moves the ball forward, but I would certainly hope we could find something that gives everybody comfort on this matter.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the effort. In my experience, we never do good work when we try and draft something at the table while we're sitting here. And I'm absolutely no disrespect intended, because I know we're trying hard to try and thread the needle, but I'm not sure the sentence even entirely makes sense to me as rewritten. But I'm willing to continue to toss language back and forth and see if we can come up with something which we could vote on tally and then make public. I'm not sure we're going to be able to pull it off sitting here at the table right this minute. And I'm not sure it's fair to everybody who's watching and listening, including the requesters, to have them sit here all day while, you know, we huddle in our respective corners and try wordsmithing one way or another. So I'm not closing the door on the efforts. I'm not sure this is the best way to get that done.
Okay. Can I inquire with the Office of General Counsel, what is our calendar on this advisory opinion request?
January 8th, I believe.
And I know that we're voting on a calendar later on in the agenda. I don't have that in front of me right now. What's our proposed first meeting of the new year?
I believe it's January 9th.
January 11th?
Yeah. January 9th. Exact January 11th for the open.
For the open.
Oh, for open. I'm sorry. Yes.
And let me, just as further food for thought, as a potential alternative edit, let me propose something else out there, just so we have a few different plates or a few different balls in the air that we're juggling. Another possible edit would be at the end of line 22, putting a period after advertising on line 23, striking the word although, then adding a prefatory clause, for the reasons set forth in the respective draft opinions, comma, and then the commission did not agree by the required 4 affirmative votes on the, insert the word legal, basis for this conclusion, striking or scope of its. And of course, that would also include striking the footnote language.
Can you give me that one again?
Sure, not a problem. End of line 22, strike the comma, insert a period after advertising. The beginning of line 23, strike although, add the phrase, for the reasons set forth in their respective draft opinions, comma. And then it would read from there, the commission did not agree by the required 4 affirmative votes on the legal basis for this conclusion. So adding legal before basis and striking or scope of its conclusion. And as I mentioned before, striking the footnote.
Not prepared to do it right this second.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Peterson.
Can I ask the requester, in the event that there was a desire to continue to kind of hash this out, it looks like there might be a three-day extension at a minimum that might be needed to be put in place in order to consider this at the first meeting of the new year, or if you couldn't give us an extension, there, I don't know if there'd be interest in continuing to try to resolve this by tally, but what is your time frame in terms of ability to offer an extension if necessary?
Sure, we certainly, the extension into January, we'd be happy to grant. I'm more concerned about the federal judiciary purging some of the talent up there and ending. So I'm just hoping there'd still be a quorum for a vote on something like that, but certainly if that were the possibility, we'd be happy to grant an extension.
Okay.
I wanted to chat with Commissioner Peterson for a second, so.
Okay.
Take a quick break. Meeting until perhaps 2 o'clock. And then maybe we, if we make headway, fine. If we're not, we'll let you know quickly, no. And then in the meantime, I'm going to ask for a couple of things to be done by vote. So I guess, let's say, take it out of order while this is. I'm not sure procedurally the best way to do it, but there's a couple of things I'd like to see us vote on if we can, one of which is our legislative recommendations.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. So we're not going to recess. We're just going to hold this matter over until 2 o'clock. Is that correct?
I guess that's the phraseology.
Okay.
So.
Sir, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Council, I thought, had something to say.
We were informed that requester may not be available after 2 o'clock, and before we agreed to that, I wanted to make the commissioners aware of that fact.
Well, I think we'll either have a deal or we won't at that point.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go to item 4, Legislative Recommendations, Agenda Document 17-61-A. Mr. Pugh, thank you for all the work you've done on this, plus all the other stuff you do along this line, and some of the emergency stuff we seem to be burdening you with. So, but please hold forth here, and I don't think it'll take a lot of discussion on our end in order to have a vote for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The draft legislative recommendations for 2017 before you today reflect a commission decision to focus on areas of widespread and perhaps even unanimous agreement from all the commissioners. The 12 recommendations are listed in the agenda document, and I just wanted to mention that 2018 will be an important year for particularly the administrative fines program recommendation, because under current law, that program applies to reports filed through the year-end 2018 report, which will be due in January of 2019. But the authorization of this program needs to be extended by legislation for administrative fines programs to apply to later reports. In this package, the Commission again asked Congress to make that efficient and measurably effective program a permanent program. Congress has
Should we put it in bold?
Congress has previously acted on the Commission's legislative recommendations to extend this program on 5 separate occasions, and legislation in 2018 would be the 6th extension of this program. We recommend the Commission approve all these recommendations, and we will provide them to Congress and the Administration, including our oversight committees, which are the Committee on House Administration and the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration, our Appropriations Subcommittees, and our OMB contacts. And finally, I'd like to thank the commissioners and, as always, my colleagues throughout the agency for their contributions to this document.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? A motion? Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move approval of agenda document number 17-61-A, legislative recommendations for 2017.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Yeah, I have it unanimously.
Thank you.
To move item 3, assessment of commission action on enforcement matters. Really, all I'm interested in is asking for the data that we compiled periodically out of our office be provided quarterly through the Office of General Counsel, and the part that goes public is redacted in accordance with the recommendations of Larry Calvert. And those are, first of all, the date of the filing of the complaint, there's only three when I talked to Calvert. All of the material that's requested in the clarification of agenda document, except that for the ones that go public, there'll be no inclusion, will be properly drafted according to the recommendation of Larry Calvert. Maybe you want to run through which ones those are. Or do you want me to read off?
I think you could lead off, as it's your motion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, it would be the matter, the date of the filing of the complaint. Of course, the name of the requester. All dates that the matter is requested to be held over. I think, what was your recommendation on that?
I think that what we would intend to do, if your proposal passes, Mr. Chairman, is that if I understand the proposal correctly, the information that has been in the charts that have accompanied your motion to motions over the last couple of years to set enforcement priorities, that we would produce those charts and include them in the Enforcement Division's quarterly reports, and then that information which we have advised you could be made public in the versions of your charts that have been put on blue would periodically be made public
each quarter.
It's my understanding that absent direction from the commission, we would not be making public any information that has not already been made public in connection with these charts.
That's exactly right. In other words, you've pointed out the number of areas where you felt that they should also be redacted or just not included, and that's certainly what I fully agree with. And as part of my motion, I don't know how we want to phrase that, but that's exactly what the content and structure and the items, you know, that have been redacted from the enforcement version provided to the commission would continue, something along that line.
Right. As I understand it, the language of the motion technically, it calls on us to make appropriate redactions, and I guess I would say to the commission our intention is not to do anything differently than we've already been doing.
All right, thank you. Would it be possible to have a motion on that? Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move approval of your proposal as summarized in agenda document number 17-53-A. I'd like to add one potential request. If we could add an additional column to allow for people to provide notes about the MERS, and in particular, I'm thinking at times when certain things are holdover, for example, for reasons like litigation or different reasons like that. Obviously, that stuff is probably going to be redacted, but it gives people an opportunity to provide a little bit of context for the reason for the hold. Other than that, would be my motion. Hopefully, it's a friendly amendment. I move approval of the document with that amendment.
The only concern I have is that It may be more complex than you think rather than just put it in a square. And that's concerning to me to some degree, whether or not. And the the reasons could vary. Or I'm not too sure. People might draw us questions. Well, what litigation are you waiting for? And
okay.
I don't know. I'm concerned about that.
If you don't want to add it, I'll just write my own notes on there. It's fine.
Well,
I can approve it without.
You're the upcoming chair because I think you get the votes.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Vice Chair, I believe the motion. Madam Vice Chair, I believe you moved 17-53-A, I think the operative document containing the motion to amend Directive 68 is 17-53-B.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
And what does it say?
I just had the wrong. I said A instead of B.
Oh.
So thank you for that correction. I move approval of agenda document.
I'm not sure I have 17-53-B in front of me.
17-53-B?
B. B as in beta.
I don't think I have that.
It's right here.
Oh. I've been looking at the wrong one. Excuse me.
Yeah. I see what you did. Is there any motion, any further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. I'm sorry, what was the motion?
Just a motion to support
to approve the
adoption of this.
I abstain.
Excuse me.
Without the amendment, right?
I was going to say, for the record, was that with or without the friendly amendment?
It's without.
It's without.
Without.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. One abstention. Commissioner Weintraub and I, Vice Chair.
Which?
Excuse me.
I voted aye on one. I think Commissioner Goodman had just one question. I don't know
okay.
if that was considered a binding vote. I think he's probably on board.
You want to unbind it?
But I think he had a question, and so just I think he.
I had a couple of questions before I voted.
But pardon me, sure, go ahead.
My vote's recorded as an abstention. I didn't have time.
No. Let's get some questions answered.
Well, Madam Secretary, what's the status of that vote?
My understanding is that the vote was called. Mr. Calvert?
That would be my understanding as well. If the commission, the chair... I'd ask the secretary if she heard the chair announce the vote.
He did.
The vote has been called.
Okay. Well, I would be glad to move to. I'd be glad to move to unwind that if you like.
I move to reconsider.
Okay. Move to reconsider. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Mr. Goodman, sorry about that.
The information that'll be on this chart goes into the status reports to the commission. Am I right?
That's my understanding.
And does that become a public document?
It would under this proposal with appropriate redactions. Of the new information that's coming from Commissioner Walther's charts, as I said, it would be our intention to redact anything that we're not already making public with respect to those charts. And I guess as to the rest of the status of enforcement report, we would redact anything except those pieces of statistical information that we are already making public under the public disclosure policy the commission adopted last summer.
May I continue, Mr.?
Of course, please do.
The chart that I am looking at called Relevant Dates for Initial Substantive Recommendations.
I'm sorry,
That's in document 17-53A.
Okay.
Is that what is contemplated in the language in the amendments to Directive 68?
I believe so. It's the chairman's motion.
Well, then I'll direct my question to the chairman. Mr. Chairman, this information that would presumptively be made public subject to redaction, I understood Mr. Counsel to say appropriate redactions. So I guess I want to understand the scope of that. For example, your chart, if what is contemplated is the chart that you've attached on 17-53A, I read the language to go a little bit beyond that data. I just want to understand what's contemplated and intended.
I'm just looking for the data that... And I think I've produced five of them so far, and they've all been the same format,
well,
same format.
Let me highlight that's the one that I'm concerned might about. Be of more pointed concern. I see on your chart that is a part of document A, I don't see the date that the complaint was filed with the FEC.
That's correct.
But in directive number 68, on page 2, we would say the date of receipt of a complaint.
I might be able to clarify on that. As you probably recall, Commissioner, the chairman has circulated both an internal and a public version of these charts when he has made his motions over the last couple of years. The material, my understanding is that the material that would be presented to the Commission in the quarterly status of enforcement report would be the material that has heretofore been in the non-public version of the Commissioner's motions, and that we would then redact the information that does not appear in the public version of these charts, leaving the same information that does appear in the public version of these charts.
Okay. So the document that comes to the Commission would show the date of the receipt of the complaint. The document that goes that is made public from that would redact that date.
Correct.
The reason I'm concerned about it is people can identify.
That's why it's being redacted.
From the date that they know that a press release, for example, was issued saying we filed a complaint against XYZ committee on this date, then people can follow the Commission's proceedings.
Yeah, and that's been adapted for that reason.
That is why we have advised Commissioner Walther in his prior iterations of this that information cannot be made public.
That's helpful clarification. The other I have is... in the same list of information that will be included, that says all dates that a matter was requested to be held over. That is mentioned in the passive voice, was requested to be held over. I see on the chart of A that the asterisk that qualifies that information. Did I see this? Bear with me. Now I'm looking at two different documents now, but in the it also is part of A, there is an asterisk. And it says currently subject to an informal hold request by one or more commissioners. Is that intended to be reflected on the either the report we receive from OGC or made public?
I would defer to the chairman on that, given that it's his motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand
the same data that we've always had. I was looking for the asterisk.
Is it intended, contemplated that the under section 2? I think H-I, that asterisk...
I'm not sure. This was made public. Oh, I see. Oh, well, yeah, the informal hold is somebody holding it back, which I don't think is a good policy, but it's holding it back for some reason, but it's not made public because it didn't come to the commission. And usually, you know, at that point, somebody may hold this over and go, yeah, sure. And then on this case, but of concern to me has been what I consider to be these holds where nobody knows and there's no formal decision on the fact that things are being held. And that's a concern to me.
Well, so it is contemplated that there will be an asterisk to matters held over.
Right.
And there will be some explanation assigned to that asterisk.
Well, really, it just the way it's been is it just points out that it's not a formal, it hasn't been formally held over. So that the public can be aware that they're being held over, but it hasn't reached a decision by the commission yet. That was my concern.
The language proposed is all dates that a matter was requested to be held over. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
My question is what's contemplated by that? Because the asterisk that is reflected in your earlier documents is currently subject to an informal hold request by one or more commissioners. We have held matters over for numerous reasons. We've had formal votes holding them over. The last time we've done that, I have formally explained my rationale for voting to abstain in a matter, and I have committed that to writing. I don't know if that's formal or informal. We held a vote. There are informal holds where commissioners request more time. Then there have been votes of abstention. Commissioner, we had one at the end of 2015 that was a 4-1 or 2 vote, I believe. And then there are many matters where the Office of General Counsel has submitted it up, and then the Office of General Counsel says they need more time. I'm just saying, I just want to be sure I don't understand what is intended by the language in the sample template that says currently subject to an informal hold request by one or more commissioners. Now, I don't mind the report saying that the matter showing, for example, that it was held over at these meetings. I guess I just don't want a misleading caption that every time you see an asterisk, it's a hold by one or more commissioners. And I don't know what the definition of informal versus formal would be. And so I guess we just need to maybe understand what's contemplated by 2I.
Maybe for me, the formal hold is when it reaches a meeting, I guess, on the tally vote or any action that's formal in the sense that we'd like to hold off. You know, we get to the meeting and say, I need to think more about that, and finally it's being held over. But it's known publicly that it's been held over because
at
a meeting.
That.
There's been a formal action. Here is if somebody, and it's happened in the past, says, you know, I'd like to have you hold that over, and it kind of nobody knows about it, but it kind of gets held over.
I understand the purpose of disclosing that a matter
concern.
Has appeared before the commission at prior meetings. I'm not disputing that.
Right.
I guess... I read the language, the amended language of number 68, not to provide any asterisk and not to provide any reason why a matter was held, because that's not in directive number 68.
I guess the point is if there's being, if something's ready to go and it's being held over and it's not been done at a commission level, that people get to find out that something's being held over. You know,
I understand that is going to be a column on the chart.
Yeah.
Okay. I want...
What would you suggest?
Let me ask the Office of General Counsel. Do you read the change language in Section 2B2I to incorporate any reasoning for the hold and or assignment of who in the building needs more time with it?
I did not read the language to include... rationales or assignment as to who. I did read J right underneath that as contemplating assignment as to who, and I had advised the chairman's office that we would likely redact that information unless the commission, if that information was going to be made public, we would appreciate very clear guidance from the commission on that. And I think that we would appreciate some clear guidance on the questions you've raised on I as well.
Mr. Chairman, I think the information is fair. I've been prepared to own any holds that I've made, and I'm prepared to continue to do that. I've done it. I've put it, committed it to writing in the minutes of the meetings and on two occasions. Mm-hmm. But I think that you should be aware that your proposal is going to still leave some need for clarification for the Office of General Counsel and the Commission. And there are many people who may be the requesters of a hold. It could be the Office of General Counsel.
Well, that's part of my concern, is that sometimes it's been held that way. And I just think if it's ready to go and it's been held without commission action, then I think that's important to be aware of. But I am aware that there's been times in the past where the Office of General Counsel has held things over, or maybe one of the commissioners have asked to say, well, we don't want to, can you hold that off for a while? I want to discourage that practice, but at least make it known that that's what's happening to the case.
That's what's happening to the case.
Yeah, it's happening to the case.
Okay. Yeah. Let me ask Office of General Counsel, reading it now, would you contemplate redacting the names of the requesters if it's Office of General Counsel that's requested to hold it over?
I have to say that I had not considered the question in light of anything other than commissioners. That had been our determination in terms of commissioners.
It would be redacted in that case?
Yes, absent contrary direction from the commission.
And how about if it's a vote of the commission? In other words, one commissioner moves to proceed, and there's a vote of the commission to take more time with it. We've had that in a couple of instances.
I'd want to give that some thought. My initial reaction is that is a reflection of the deliberative process of the commission while the case is still ongoing. So my initial reaction is to be inclined not to include that, but I'd want to give it some more thought.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Mr. Cowell.
Sure thing. Oh, there's a typo. In the word third line from the bottom, that says, are you aware of, are you tracking with me? And it says, the number of days between the date of receipt of the complaint or referral and commission action should be inaction, calculated at the close of the quarter.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Which document are you on?
This is on paragraph 3, page 2 of the blue copy.
The red line.
The red line.
Not this one. This one. This is going public.
And instead of the word action, it's inaction.
Oh, so this would change it to
right.
I'm with you, Mr. Chairman.
Right, sounds good.
I think that one thing that I might want to add here, in terms of what kind of direction you give us on I and J, not just about what is made public and what's not, but just on the nature of the data to begin with, there are some calls here about what to include and what not to include that we don't have to currently make that the chairman has put in his charts, and in terms of what to include about who is holding something over and why, even if that information is not released publicly, attributing it to a commissioner might be, or to somebody that's not OGC. Mm-hmm. Some cases we'll know, some cases we might not know. And so we're going to need some clear direction from you guys as to just what data you want, separate and apart from what part of that data is made public.
Mm-hmm. I presume you'll bring some templates and some samples to the commission for further review.
Well, you'll get to see the first one, I suppose, if this motion passes,
and
tell
Mr. Chairman,
us what you want, what you don't.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Larry. I'm prepared to support this. I don't know that enforcement bodies normally tell the public where they stand on each case, but if this is a fair transparency. However, I must say that the more we start revealing, then the more possibility there's going to be that commissioners have to defend their proceedings publicly. Whenever I've held something, I've put it in writing for about 2 years. If some of those statements have to go public without revealing the names of respondents, and that may be a result of that. It may be the transparency that this drives, and that may be a good thing. But I do see one consequence of this being that commissioners may start to talk more publicly about the proceedings here in generic terms.
Well, I guess that's possible. I admire your diligence in keeping track of your holdovers for 2 years. That's pretty diligent of you there. So, but I can't say what the reaction is going to be. I think people want to look at it. They're going to try and understand how we're doing here, which I think is part of the idea is to just be open and be able to disclose what the public's entitled to know unless it's somehow this needs to be redacted. So
I'm prepared to vote for the document.
Well, we have.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to move the document. I'd like to go back, though, to instead of calling it a separate column for a note, on item J that we've just been talking about, the names of requester or requestors and any pertinent information. Because part of what Commissioner Goodman was talking about encapsulates what I was trying to articulate earlier, which is there are times where there's a very good reason for holding some things over, and I think allowing the commissioner whose name now is going to be put in the document to give a short reason. We could even come up with a key or something of, OGC held it over, or commissioners needed more time, or they were holding it for pending litigation. Or sometimes commissioners put a lot of matters on an agenda where it's just literally impossible to be prepared for all of them. And so sometimes there are unusual circumstances. I don't anticipate that happening next year, but it's happened before. And so I think if you'd be willing to add as a friendly amendment the name of the requester and any pertinent information.
Bear in mind that the name of the requester does not go public.
I know. And the pertinent information probably wouldn't either. It may or may not. I don't know.
I think that's a friendly, constructive.
This is just the private information, so it's fine with me.
Okay, thank you.
When we debated how we proceed, previously, I proposed a directive at that time that would have required commissioners to explain their rationale, and I've been prepared to do
that.
I
would vote for that if you want to bring it up again. I don't think they reached a vote, did it? It was probably snagged with some of the other provisions that were in it.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to remind you that the proposal that Commissioner Goodman is referring to basically said that any commissioner could hold up any matter indefinitely. So that's why you and I did not vote for it in the first go-round.
Well, thanks for the addition. Yeah,
I said two or more commissioners. Two or more, mm-hmm. And had to explain their reasonings. to in part to be accountable, in part to avoid an arbitrary and capricious claim, but to be accountable in writing for such a hold, and it would take two or more commissioners.
That's for another day, I guess. Madam Vice Chair.
I move approval. Are we ready for a motion?
I have one further question.
So, Commissioner Whiteford.
Mr. Calvert, we're talking about creating a document that would have certain information redacted, but would it be subject to a FOIA request, either during the pendency of the matters or after they were completed?
Could be subject to a FOIA request. I would imagine that there would not be a whole lot of difference between what we would redact as a matter of privilege or commission policy and what would be provided under FOIA. But, again, we haven't, sat down with one and gamed that out. It's a good question. I don't think there would be any daylight there, but there could be.
Just one more point to Commissioner Conter's amendment. Any characterization of the basis for the holdover, OGC would not second-guess, question, or do any, it would be the reason provided by the commissioner, if so provided. But I don't want OGC in the business of trying to characterize the reason for holdovers if there is such a holdover request.
Ms. Weintraub.
And I just want to be clear that those reasons would be tagged to the commissioners who are articulating them. So right. It would be because, as you know, frequently we disagree on whether holds are warranted or not.
All right. Madam Vice Chair.
I move approval of agenda document number 17-53B with the amendment on section Roman 2B2J, add the language after requester, add and any pertinent information provided by the name of the person holding the matter over.
And also the inaction should be, the word inaction should be inaction on the second line up on page 2.
Yes, that as well. Yes, that as well. Thank you.
Could I suggest a friendly amendment?
Commissioner Weintraub.
That might be simpler just to say, I've already forgotten what you said, but either by or from, I can't remember which preposition was being used, that or those requesters?
By those requesters?
That or those requesters, since it could be one or more. But,
well, it says the names of the requesters.
Or
this stays in. The names of the requesters is in already.
Whatever you want to do.
Okay. It probably would be simpler, but since I'm not completely following it, let's just keep it the way that we proposed it.
Okay. Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
We are. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it unanimously. Thanks. Thanks for your support. I appreciate that. There's nothing left.
Wait. The meeting dates.
Meeting dates.
I haven't finished my sentence yet.
Election of officers for next year.
Let's have that.
Here, I can just move approval. I move approval of agenda document number 17-60-A, which are the meeting dates for the beginning of next year.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Ayes have it unanimously. Now, we will be back at 2 o'clock. In the meantime, we can talk. Or not, as the case may be, but we'll give an answer on that AO.
So we're going to come back into open session at 2 o'clock.
We'll come back into open session at 2 o'clock with a handbag of something. Now resuming the open session. There was a continued this morning. We're now on the issue of advisory opinion number 2017-12 with a discussion. We left it that we would try to see if we could reach some kind of a point of view that would meet the satisfaction of all of us. So we went to lunch instead. I'm just kidding. We did go to lunch, but nevertheless, based upon what I know, we're still not able to quite get there, but let's chat for a minute and see where we go. I had to propose something to look at, basically, which would simply be a footnote, and then in the footnote, it would just point, the one sentence would just say, the commissioners expressed divergent points of view or have held different rationale for reaching the decision, some of which can be identified, and that would name the new. It would assume that we would amend draft A, as indicated previously, and agenda draft B, both of which were voted upon at the meeting, open meeting. But at this point, it doesn't look like that can garner the requisite, well, garner five votes anyway. But I'm just throwing out some thoughts, and I'm open for any discussion. Anybody want to add to it? How this, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to let my colleagues know that we're in the process of making blue a version of draft A, which is the exact thing that we voted on, so that at least there would be a clean copy of that, and we could at least avoid the issue of there being two drafts, except one of them wasn't exactly the draft that got voted on, and I think that that's going to, as you know, it always takes a little bit of time to make a document blue, so but I think that might help to alleviate some of the confusion, and as I said earlier, I'm happy to, I mean, on the one hand, everyone has voted for a draft that expresses the conclusion that the ads have to include the disclaimers. So, in some sense, the requester has an answer. It's not expressed in a single document, but I think there is certainly some guidance as to what the views of the commission are. I'm happy to continue to work with my colleagues to see if there's any way to get to a single document, but I don't think we're there yet. And I think it's, as I said earlier, I think, sort of writing on the fly and trying to pass language back and forth in the middle of a meeting is not a good process for ending up with a result that everybody feels comfortable with in the end and doesn't wake up the next morning and say, oh my God, we should have changed the word to that because that would have made more sense. I just don't want to find ourselves in that position.
Well, we have done this before, and maybe the results weren't perfect, but at least we got a result. Here, my only point on this is that you'd like to have a document that you can actually say, we made a decision, and then from then on, and enough notice to know that there's other points of view out there. It wasn't unanimous. We got four votes, though. And so it seems to me that if there's a way to express that in a more acceptable point of view, and mostly that is just to give notice in this sentence. It's just one sentence. That there's other ideas out there. I did not like the idea of being cabined in to just the two agenda documents as the content of our various views, because I and others are probably going to write statements of reasons and it might go on and on a little bit. So I didn't want to have that misunderstanding that this is a composite of all thinking on it from the commissioner level. So I used the word some. Some of which can be identified in Agenda Document 1 and 2, so that it's clear that read it and watch it and read it and think about it, but there could be additional embellishments or clarifications from just those two documents of themselves, because they never are exactly the way we... they're never perfection, let's put it that way. Anyway, I would, if there's areas where you see moving, or if there is a way to express that view in a less concerning way, I'd think we ought to give it a shot. But I do think, and say the word divergent, the use of the word rationale, different rationale instead of points of view, excuse me, different rationales, some of which can be something like that, might be a way to look at it. Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I would be willing to vote for your proposal.
Mr. Chairman, I would too.
I mean, I saw it over lunch. I've heard you repeat it again here. I thought that the language you came up with was a very good attempt to try to bridge all the different concerns, and I could support that too if there were a motion made.
Mr. Weintraub.
I would prefer not to vote on it today. I would prefer to make the document that the chairman and I already voted on to make that blue as we voted on it so that we could have a clean draft and it wouldn't be confused by the amendment. And I'm not, at this moment, entirely comfortable with the formulation that says some of which can be identified in this document and that document, because I want, in some ways this would take me back closer to your original footnote, but I don't want it to be unclear that which draft I supported. I don't want to suggest that there was some consensus on draft B or the rationale on draft B, because I definitely do not agree with that. So if we're going to go down this road, I would prefer greater clarity on which draft was supported.
Well, I mean, I'm with you on that, but I don't know. So I'm open to how to get that done. Madam Vice Chair.
Perhaps we could drop a footnote to after each document number to record the names of the people who voted for that document. And I know you're getting your document blue right now. Since someone has to leave in a little bit, perhaps we could do the vote, and then I believe that would be a technical conforming change, just to add in the number of the document that'll be blue in the next few minutes. So we could do both of those things, and I think that would allay your concern. Sounds like.
Well, I think we might, if we're going to say we voted for that document, I think we actually have to vote for that document.
Let's get the document amended, document A, so that we have that behind us, and no matter what, we're going to do that. So would you like to make a motion for that, to amend it? Just you would amend draft A.
Well,
I guess it never went blue is the concern.
We already voted for an amended. We amended it at the table.
Right.
But in order for somebody to track that, if they were looking back later, they're going to have to sort of check the SIR to listen to the statement. So I thought if we're going to... again, I didn't realize, because I didn't get your draft C until we walked into the meeting, that this was going to be an issue, or I would have done this before we came in today. Sure. I thought we could just amend it at the table and it would be fine. But that has now created an area of confusion that I think I would want to see alleviated before we vote on anything. And I think it would, as I understand it from counsel, I think we have to actually vote on that document.
We've already voted.
Yeah, we already voted.
Right, but that document wasn't in front of us, so it sort of...
So how do we get it done? That's the question. How do we get it done now?
Well, it's in the process of being made blue as we speak, I think.
Good.
So the vote that has already been taken is on draft A, subject to amendments at the table, and the new document is actually a version of that. It reflects the amendments that were made at the table in the document. So as a technical matter, there is no draft A-1 right now.
So we call it A-1?
Public to vote on.
Draft A-1?
But it doesn't exist yet.
We're not saying.
The problem is you don't technically need to vote again on the motion that's already been made. The problem is your vote certification doesn't reflect that it was draft A-1.
Right.
So the paper trail concern is still not quite looped altogether, if that.
I think the question is whether it has to or not, but as a matter of preference to try and make sure that there's no misunderstanding as to what document it was. So, I mean, I support
Commissioner Right, so Weintraub. So my answer is it doesn't have to be, but if you're trying to link up all the steps, the certification as current will not say A1.
We can't say we voted for draft A1 because, technically speaking, we didn't, although it will reflect the text that we voted for.
But then why? So then why can't you say the first A if it's going to reflect the text that we voted for, that you voted for?
Well, it won't, because the first draft A was amended at the table. So it's not going to be the same document.
So when we vote on a document, I say, oh, and I'd like to change this one word, you're saying the document's not changed. The motion says that.
Yeah,
so
the motion says that. And then if we adopt it, then there is a final draft. There's a final version of that, and that reflects the changes. But in this case, there won't be a final version of it because we didn't adopt the document. So we have to create the final version.
Do we need a motion to do that, or is it being done already? As I understand, something's going on blue right now.
I think what we would have to do to clean it up at this point, and again, if I had known we were going to have a draft C that wanted to refer to these documents, then I would have done it before the meeting, but I didn't know that. But I think there may be other ways of doing this, but one way of doing it would be to move to reconsider the vote on draft A and then have a new vote on draft A1, but we have to wait until that document is on blue and it's in front of us before we could do that. And having said all of that, I still personally would like a little bit more time to think about the language.
To think about which language?
The language that is being proposed for draft C.
The language about the express diversion rationales?
Yes.
You want to think about that?
Yes. Yeah, it was handed to me 5 minutes ago, and I'd like to think about it.
Well, it's the same sentiment that we've been talking about since this morning.
Actually, since last night.
Yeah, for a while now. It's the same. If we can't agree on a couple of words.
Well, there must be some words at work. I see the point.
I think there might be. I'd like more than 5 minutes to think about it, though.
I think we've had more than 5 minutes.
So are we using the word rationale instead of points of view?
Well, I think that was your change, Steve.
Yeah,
I'm
working on a draft that's in front of you that it's not like a blue document that everybody has.
Yeah, I apologize.
I'm just based on everything that's being discussed right now. It's just changing it by minute.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to thank you and Commissioner Peterson for offering what I view is about four constructive solutions to this, all of which, some of which are more explicit and cite the actual documents that are in the historical record. Commissioner Peterson even offered to not even cite those documents, but to reflect that there were drafts in existence. And I'd just like to thank you for trying to get the commission to a consensus position, to get Mr. Pudner to a consensus yes, and to get the public, because I take it that Mr. Pudner's request wasn't just for his organization, but was to serve a broader public purpose. And Mr. Pudner, you do walk away with a yes. I think your attorney or attorneys are fairly capable of taking the two drafts to see where the commission is on the issue, that in some shape or form this disclosure information is going to be required in your Facebook ads. And I just want to thank you for trying to get there. My time is limited today, and it doesn't look like we're going to get there. And so I just wanted to express those thoughts that I think there's been yeoman effort at compromise here, and when one commissioner doesn't want to compromise, then they're just not going to be one.
What about the idea of saying distilling it down one more way, and rather than reaching the decision after the period, just say the commissioners hold different rationale, or some of the commissioners, but let's try it this way: the commissioners hold different rationales regarding their respective votes, comma, some of which can be found in the two agenda, or just or in the two agenda documents considered and voted upon at the meeting.
That's fine with me.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine with me.
It's a little bit not as quite as messy, but it gets the point across in short sentences. Just a thought. No matter what we need to, is this, what does it take to get on blue these days? Are we there yet, or what?
The staff in our office that normally handles that had been waiting throughout the afternoon on something, so he stepped out of the office for a moment for lunch, but he should be back momentarily.
So it's not in the hopper yet?
I mean, it should be within a half hour, within 20 minutes or so.
Mr. Goodman has to leave. Is there a way to reach a consensus on this kind of language and know in advance that we can support that when it does go on blue? I mean, maybe we could begin in that regard.
We can't vote on the document if it's not in front of us. It's not in front of us.
I'm sorry, we can vote on draft C as edited at the table.
Well, not if it contains a reference to a document that's not in front of us yet.
But that document is. It was as amended.
Right.
And there could be a technical agreement to a technical citation, a technical change in the citation.
It could say
draft A as amended, and then it could say paren, subsequently released as draft D, or whatever A2 or A, whatever that document, because we're not going to vote again on that document. We've had the vote on that document as amended. We're not anticipating another vote.
Well,
if it's a worry about what we're citing, we can arrange the proper citation for that.
Well, that's what I'm unclear on. I don't think we can just swap out the document and say this is the thing we voted on when it wasn't actually
amended. No, the proper citation will be draft A as amended. And then you could put in subsequently provided or made blue or made public as draft or whatever the new notation is.
Does that work?
We're all shaking our heads yes, so we're going to go with yes, that works. I think the record is sufficiently clear and it is identical in substance to the motion originally taken.
I think we have it. Mr. Weintraub, do you want to read it?
Yeah. with apologies to everyone, because I think it would have been a lot better to not do this in the middle of the meeting, but sometimes the sausage gets made in public. All right, so this is really kind of an amalgam of what everyone has thrown out at one point or another. We would take draft C. On line 22, we would end the sentence at the end of that line, advertising, period. Delete the rest of that paragraph, lines 23 to 25. Put a footnote at the end of that sentence. So it would be advertising, period, footnote. We're back to the footnote. The footnote would read, in reaching this conclusion, commissioners relied on different rationales, comma, some of which are reflected in... And then we go to the text of the footnote that was originally in Draft C, because if we're going to go down this road, I would rather have more clarity rather than less clarity about who voted for what. With the change that where it now says Agenda Document 17-59A, it would read 17-59A1, which would be the new blue document that would reflect what the text that Commissioner Walther and I, Chair Walther and I, voted for. And I'm asking the staff if we can do it that way. Does that work?
Exactly. Dana, is it public now? It's not. She's literally making copies right now, and I believe that if we're going to include it in a motion, we need to do a late submitted document motion.
That makes sense. So I just want to get clarification from council. Can I? Okay. You're, okay. Yes.
They're going to be made right now.
Gotcha. Commissioners. Oh, go ahead,
Mike. I don't think that a late submitted document motion is necessary because, and this is splitting the hair particularly fine here, you're not actually considering draft A1. You are considering draft C as amended, and you are directing the secretary to make draft A1 public, and you are citing to it in a footnote. But you're not actually going to consider and vote on draft A1.
But the footnote would include our votes for the text that is embodied in A1.
Mm-hmm. Right. In other words, the actual vote by each of the commissioners will be reflected in the footnote.
You're going, so the plan is to vote on document A1?
Can, if you say we need to. What I want is to have a clean document that reflects the thing we voted on. That
I guess there is a question to make it sound like there's a vote in advance, but I don't know how.
I don't have the language in front of me, but the way you read the footnote, it sounded to me like you would accomplish that in reaching this conclusion. Commissioners had different rationales, some of which are reflected in documents.
Right, but the documents would have a parenthetical after them that reflected who voted for
what.
In other words, document A1 supported by Commissioner Weintraub and I, and document B supported by so-and-so.
If you were going to be
negative way,
absolutely accurate, you'd probably have to vote on if that footnote was going to be on be absolutely accurate, you'd need to vote on A1. If you figured it was close enough and people can figure it out, you didn't need to. Then you
Why don't we
need
just
to.
Do it the right way?
Look to it for guidance. I want it to be a clear and accurate document. But it looks like we may actually have the blue document.
Let's just do it the right way.
Are you saying it would be cleaner if we reconsidered the vote on A and revoted it?
I think that would probably be the cleanest thing. Would be to reconsider the vote on A, and then vote.
You can't move to reconsider
A1.
And then we would need a motion for the late submitted document.
And you would need a motion for the
late submitted document. Now, the motion to reconsider needs to be made by someone who voted for it.
Who was on the prevailing side.
So it would be Commissioner Weintraub.
Well, there is the prevailing side? I mean, nobody actually prevailed. Someone who voted for it.
Yeah, you have to vote.
Yes, I would.
You have to take your vote back.
Yes.
Yeah. I would.
No, one moment.
Hey, we're on a roll.
Oh, God. I think they must have run out of copies or something. Maybe there's another one there.
It's kind of like the end of first.
Are we prepared to move to retract Exhibit A or Agenda Document A? We're just following the right steps. Well, you were going to.
Yeah, one moment.
Consult with yourself.
Chairman.
Right.
And if we do the votes, Commissioner Goodman, I think it would close later.
Well, we'll still have four votes.
Yeah.
Motion to reconsider can only be made by a member who voted on the prevailing side, which that would mean since the motion failed, it would need to be a member who voted against that motion who made the motion to reconsider.
Yeah, we're familiar with that approach.
One of you guys has to move to.
Do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move to reconsider the vote that was made with respect to agenda document number 17-59A.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The ayes have it unanimously. Commissioner Peterson to vote, Petitioner Goodman to be vote, Commissioner Goodman to post to vote maybe later. Okay.
We need a late submitted document motion now for agenda document 17-59-81.
And Vice Chair?
So moved.
Good enough for me.
Good enough for me, too. Call the question, Mr. Exactly.
Seriously? Okay.
We have to vote on it.
We so moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Most is unanimous with the time left for Commissioner Goodman to vote.
Okay, my turn.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of a proposed answer to a advisory opinion request 2017-12 from Take Back Action Fund as reflected in agenda document number 17-59A-1.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, right now we're deadlocking 2-2. Commissioner Weintraub voted in favor. I voted in favor. The vice chair voted against, along with Commissioner Peterson, and we'll leave a space available.
But by definition, the motion will fail
Course.
We can't get to four from there.
Exactly.
All right. Now that we've done all that, do I need to repeat the motion? Did I make a motion before?
I don't believe you did make a motion before.
Yeah. How about this, and you tell me if this motion works. I move to approve an amended version of draft C of the response to advisory opinion request 2017-12 from Take Back Action Fund as set forth in agenda document 17-59-C and as amended as I previously described at the table.
That motion's in order.
Thank you, Mr. Calvert. Where would we be without you?
For sure. Prepared to vote? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? None. The ayes have it. We have four votes. Leave a space for Commissioner Goodman.
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. You have it. You're welcome. Thanks for your patience.
More complicated than I anticipated.
Made it. Now proceed for election of officers. Let me just say that as I step down from this position, it's been a very enjoyable year. The usual ups and downs and frustrations and that kind of thing, but overall, I've completely enjoyed it. I want to thank my commissioners for working on these matters. And as we all know, we have different points of view, but we ultimately inch ahead most of the way, most of the time, to get the job done for the public. So I consider this a very good year in that regard. I have the utmost respect and affection for the staff. They work so hard for us, and they do not get the kind of recognition they're entitled to get. But at this particular moment, I'd like to just say that one more time. It's really been quite great working with staff throughout this whole year. Commissioner, Madam Vice Chair, for a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say it's been a pleasure working with you this year. I enjoy our chats both on the substance and talking about kids, grandkids, hunting, trips, fishing, all kinds of interesting things that we talk about, and Wyatt in particular. It's been really fun to hear and watch Wyatt grow up. He just he graduated from high school in June, and he started college at Occidental College in California and just finished his first semester, I think yesterday or today. And so we're all proud of Wyatt, and glad he's enjoying his school so far. Steve is always a true gentleman, and he's always willing to listen to the other side. And I'm always trying, but I pretend like I have some success, but the truth is there's not a whole lot. But at least he's always willing to listen and consider the other side, and I appreciate that very much. He and his staff, as I said, have been great to work with, and so thank you to Tom, Shauna, and Shelley. I don't know if Shelley's in here, but thank you guys so much for everything throughout the year. And thank you so much, Steve. We have a little something for you from the commissioner. Well, Lee's going to be disappointed not to be here for this, but my understanding is that the last time that you were chair, you didn't get a gavel. That's what I'm told. I hope that's true. Just say, no, I don't have one.
I didn't.
Okay.
This is true.
So we got a gavel for you with the FEC seal engraved on the front. What's that called? It's not engraved, but it's etched.
Whoa.
With your name on there as well, and your own gavel to keep with you always, so you can pretend to be gaveling in meetings whenever you think that might be appropriate. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That's beautiful. I didn't mention in particular my staff, and I think that's a really oversight, because I'm looking forward to everybody else here. But, you know, between Tom and Shelley and Shauna, it's been, I'm a hard person, I know, to work for sometimes. But you've always hung in there and done the best and provided the best when I needed it. And so I appreciate your loyalty and hard work, and it's been really quite good to work with all of my staff. And even the commissioners, I'd love to make comments, but like Matt is the ultimate gentleman. I told at the outset I was kind of afraid of Caroline, you know. I was bracing myself for her, and, you know, it still worked out pretty darn good. Ellen, of course, she's always by my side, but about half the time doesn't agree with me, but still, we're philosophically aligned in most respects. And, of course, Lee's been great to work with, and he's so diligent about the way he takes into these cases and really works them up on his own and comes up with some very innovative thought. I think it's always been really helpful for us. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always like to find common ground and to be able to agree with Commissioner Hunter, currently the Vice Chair. I want to particularly acknowledge your dedication to the mission of this agency. You came out here these many years ago from Reno, and sometimes I think you've regretted that. But you really have been stalwart in your dedication to the transparency mission of this agency, and also to the well-being of the staff, who I know you hold in very high regard, and you've been a champion on trying to improve professional development opportunities for the staff. Have really cared about them a lot. And I also want to personally thank Tom Anderson, Shauna Broussard, and Shelley Garr, your tireless staff, who have, without whom we never would have gotten through this year.
Thanks for the kind words. That's very much appreciated. This is really quite an awfully nice gift. This is really special. Wyatt will love it.
Oh,
I can see him banging the gavel already.
Mr. Chairman. Come on.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to associate myself with the remarks that Commissioner, the Vice Chair, and Commissioner Weintraub just said. I couldn't agree more. I've had the privilege of serving in a chair-vice chair relationship with you and on two different occasions, once when you were the chair and I was the vice chair, and then vice versa last year. And whether we were operating in that leadership capacity or just when we were, have been just regular run-of-the-mill commissioners, it has always been a pleasure to work with you. I've greatly appreciated your professionalism, the dignified manner in which you go about your work, but I've most have appreciated your friendship. I've always enjoyed the genuine nature of your personality and just the sincerity that you've always demonstrated in all of our interactions. And I thank you for the dedication that you've demonstrated during this year as chair, and look forward to continuing to work with you going forward. And again, just thank you for everything that you've put into it. I think we say it every year. The chairmanship brings on a lot of responsibilities and very few perks, and there's a certain amount of burden that goes along with it, and it's a real testament to your leadership that that you've been able to accomplish a great deal and do it without buckling under the pressure that sometimes is placed upon you. So congratulations on a wonderful chairmanship.
Thank you very much. Very thoughtful. So we come to election of officers. Anybody willing to run? Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a nomination. It is my privilege to nominate Commissioner Weintraub to be Commission Vice Chair in 2018. We all know, maybe not everybody knows, but I'll just brief recap of the distinguished career that the Commissioner Weintraub's had. She is a graduate of Yale and also Harvard Law School, and she had a very distinguished career before she joined the Commission at the House Ethics Committee and also as counsel at Perkins Coie. But notwithstanding all the achievements she's had academically, professionally, I know that her true pride is her family. She and her husband are the proud parents of three children, one of whom is currently in China teaching English. And she recently had the opportunity to reunite with her daughter and spend some time traveling around and experiencing the country and with her daughter. And I know that was a special time, and I enjoyed. I still think I've only gotten a sliver of the travel log that you enjoyed while there, but it sounds like it was a wonderful experience to be in a different country, but more importantly to reunite with her daughter. And it's obvious, it says a lot about a parent to see what your children achieve, and her children have been volunteers in many different foreign countries to serve those who are underprivileged and help those who are, you know, we enjoy so much in this country, and they're willing to go over and live in less than ideal circumstances in order to help those who are living in less than ideal circumstances. And I think that speaks highly of Ellen's character, that she's raised daughters who have been so willing to commit to service of that sort. So I think that that she is well qualified to be vice chair again. I'm not sure if she is looking forward to the experience, but just as her children are willing to serve, I appreciate Commissioner Weintraub's willingness to serve. And at the appropriate moment, and if now would be the appropriate moment, I would be happy to make a motion for Commissioner Weintraub to be vice chair in 2018.
I think it's appropriate time. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. We have.
Well, I didn't. I abstained. You abstained. So we actually don't know if I'm going to win or not.
We're gonna.
Well, what do you think?
We'll have to hold the vote open.
Hold the vote open until Commissioner.
Well, for the record, I voted in favor. The vice chair voted in favor, and Commissioner Peterson voted in favor, and we assume Commissioner Goodwin will do the same shortly. Congratulations.
Well, it might be premature, but thank you. Would you entertain another motion, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you. Before I make my motion, I do want to thank Commissioner Peterson. The gentleman is always, and I particularly appreciate what you said because you are completely correct. There's nothing that makes me prouder than the adults that my children have become. Moving on, I would like to make a motion to nominate the next chair of the commission for 2018. 2018 will mark Caroline Hunter's 10th year as a commissioner of the Federal Election Commission. Not sure she wants me to bring that up. And it will be a busy year indeed. We've got a lot on our enforcement docket, as documents produced by the chairman have shown. We anticipate more challenging advisory opinion requests, we've got a rulemaking project that we're starting, and I know that she has plans for more rulemaking projects, and I'm looking forward to that. And I hope we will all be working together hard to protect our elections from foreign interference, in part through that rulemaking project. This will be Caroline's second term as chair of the FEC, and the last time she was chair of the FEC, I was also the vice chair. So this is, as the chairman might say, not our first rodeo. So I know she is qualified to do this because she's done it before. Now, interestingly enough, the last time I was in the position of nominating Caroline for a leadership position, it was the last time she was vice chair at the end of 2010, which was a banner year because it was the first time we had an all-female leadership team at the commission. I know there's a lot of people in town these days and throughout the country who think we need more women in leadership positions. So I'm here to say here at the FEC, we got you covered. So this will be the third time that we have an all-female leadership team at the commission. So now it's becoming sort of no big deal anymore. Caroline also has a long roster of distinguished positions that she held before. She served as vice chair of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, deputy director of the White House Office of Public Liaison, and executive officer at DHS's Office of Citizenship and Immigration Services Ombudsman. Before that, she served as associate counsel and deputy counsel at the Republican National Committee, so her knowledge of political law is deep. She graduated cum laude from the University of Memphis School of Law and has a BA from her beloved Penn State. And in addition to her duties here, Caroline is a dedicated mom of two incredibly lovely daughters. As people in the building know, one of my favorite days at the commission is Take Your Kids to Work Day. My kids used to love to come. They are, since my youngest just started graduate school, they're a little bit old for it by now. But I remember when Caroline first started bringing her lovely daughters that it was very nostalgic for me because I remembered how much my daughters loved coming, and it was a pleasure to see her daughters. And I remember that the first time when you were chair and we had Take Your Kids to Work Day, it fell on a meeting day, which is always a bit of a challenge, and you decided that every single kid who came ought to get a chance to bang the gavel at the beginning of the meeting. And I have to admit, I thought this was going to be pure mayhem. But in Caroline's typically well-organized fashion, she had her staff round everybody up and line them up, and they all came up, and it was very efficient, and every little kid got to bang the gavel, and every one of them had this brilliant smile on their face. They enjoyed that moment so much. Some of them shyly tapped it so you could barely hear it, and then some of them whacked it so hard we thought the gavel was going to break. But maybe that was just Reggie. I don't know.
That could have been likely was the case.
In any event, that is a very fond memory for me, and I think it exemplifies one of the things that Caroline and I have in common, which is that we're both moms and we love our kids and we love kids in general. So I know people often talk about the relationships here, and I think it's important to note that we do talk about our families and our vacations and share movie reviews and have a lot of civil conversations that get away from some of the tensions that sometimes people think, because that's the only thing they see, that's the only thing there is. So I guess Caroline's daughters are a little too old and much too cool to come in and bang the gavel on Take Your Kid to Work Day anymore, but I'm sure they're not nearly too cool to be very proud of their mom for her leadership at this agency. So it is my pleasure to place the name of Caroline C. Hunter in nomination to be chair of the Federal Election Commission for 2018.
Thank you very much for that very nice motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? By golly, we have a binding vote.
In the eighth grade, I didn't vote for myself, and I lost the election by one vote. So I learned since then that if you think you can do it, you vote for yourself. So, and I have a feeling Lee will vote for me, too, so I'll be okay one way or another. But thank you for that very nice motion.
So I do have a memo, a little item here. Matt gave me this, and I wasn't too sure what it meant, but it looks like somebody who's really troubled and is trying to resolve the difficulties of being whatever that person is, in this case being the chair of the commission. And then last year, maybe it was you that added the hat to it.
I think that was former and Commissioner Ravel.
Yeah. Commissioner Ravel, who added
it. Yeah, she gave it to me with the little
hat. I'm not too sure of the symbolism.
You should be able to tell easily what I added to it. Just look in the front.
Not to be used for bribing?
No.
Oh, the Dodgers.
Yes, the Dodgers sticker.
That's right.
That is.
But I have my own, too, and I thought, well, okay, when people are really troubled and things are tough and you can't get along very well, you go to the rodeo. And so I have a little insignia for the Reno Rodeo. Any of you should go at any time if you have any question about having a good time. It's home to me. My mom worked for the first Reno Rodeo back in 1936, and we've been going to the Reno Rodeo ever since. So this is for you.
Thank you, Steve.
And
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Very pensive looking. Very exciting. I'll put it here so everyone can see. Thank you. And thank you, Ellen, for your nice motion. I appreciate it.
I should have added, I meant to, and I forgot to, I also wanted to compliment your very hardworking staff, Eric Brown, Lindsay Melody, and Amy Rothstein, and say that I'm looking forward to working with the entire Hunter office in the year to come.
Thank you. They are terrific. Thank you for mentioning them. I echo that for sure. Thank you. I look forward to working with all of you next year and all of the very capable staff here at the FEC, who, as somebody mentioned, this is my second time doing this, so I know what's going on. It's, as Peterson said, it's a job that adds a lot of responsibilities without a lot of perks, but I'm looking forward to it. I think there are a lot of challenges coming up for us, but they're exciting ones, and I think we will tackle them as best we can together. And as Ellen said, we don't agree on everything, but there are a lot of management things that we've agreed on in the past, and I hope to continue to do that working with her next year. I thank all of the dedicated staff here at the FEC, and I look forward to working with you next year.
Thank you very much. Well, I think that wraps it up. And is there any management or administrative matters?
There are none, sir.
Okay, thanks. The meeting is adjourned, and best of luck. We'll be behind you.
Thank you.